Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage General Manager, Windows Store and Developer Platform, Todd Bricks.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Windows 10 Universal App Platform preview session. Over the next few hours, we are delighted to share with you, the mobile developer community, first, a preview of Windows 10 for developers. This is a very exciting time for Microsoft and our customers. We've shared a preview of Windows 10 with customers on January 21st. And here today, and at GDC later this week in San Francisco, we want to share some of what's in store for Windows 10 for app and game developers. But before we dive into Windows 10, I want to share with you, as we do every year, how far we together have come in building a wide range of engaging experiences for Windows Phone and how developer reach and opportunity has continued to grow. First, I'm pleased to share that over the last 12 months, the number of active Windows Phone Store users has grown by 50%. And due to the mobile developer community's effort, those customers now have access to over 400,000 applications and games, up 63% just over the last 12 months as well. And these customers come from all over the world, 242 markets in total. And on average, each of these customers download an app every 3 days, or about 105 downloads each over the last year alone. Moreover, these users are consuming paid applications and games at even a faster rate, with in-app purchase revenue growth in the Windows Phone Store growing even faster than the number of users, with 80% year-over-year growth. And one of the big drivers of this revenue growth for Windows Phone developers is the ongoing expansion of direct carrier billing, which has been a major effort of ours for several years now. Now it's available across 82 carriers in 48 different markets, which now account for nearly half of the paid revenue generated in the Windows Phone Store. This number leads any other smartphone platform and includes direct carrier support in large emerging markets for the very first time, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, Indonesia, and South Africa. All told, over half of the world's mobile subscriber base now can purchase apps and games with a Windows phone using direct carrier billing. This is good for customers, this is good for carriers, and it's great for developers. That's important because 93% of emerging market customers and half of developed market customers don't have access to a credit card. And direct carrier billing is the primary way they can purchase apps and games, many for the very first time. Finally, we are now hearing from Windows and Windows Phone customers on what they think about Windows 10. As of today, there are more than 2.8 million Windows insiders who are running Windows 10 on their PC, including, since February 12th now, their Windows Phone as well. This number has exploded by 60% just in the last 6 weeks since the Windows Technical Preview January release. Clearly, customers are excited about Windows 10, and we think developers will be very excited about Windows 10 as well. Because of the huge reach that Windows 10 will be available with later this year, with a store available in over 242 markets, supporting 102 languages, and providing unprecedented global reach for developers and their experiences. Windows today runs on over 1.5 billion devices around the world, and these devices will have the opportunity to run Windows 10, because, as we've announced, Windows 10 will be a free upgrade to users, which will dramatically accelerate the adoption of Windows 10, especially for Windows 7 and Windows 8 users across their phone, tablet, and PC devices. But in addition to expanding customer reach, we've also made substantial changes and enhancements to improve app discoverability within the Windows experience. A few of which I can share now, and many more that you will be able to see today in the preview release. App discovery, like everything in Windows, starts with the start experience, where the Windows Store is available and start with a full live tile. inviting customers to discover new and interesting and different apps every time they start. Second, the store itself is now one store, a global catalog of apps, games, and more, all in one place. One store, all apps, one place. And this is a more personal store as well. The preview version we've released includes some of what's coming, including personalized recommendations, editorially curated promotions, and several new ways to browse locally popular apps. And finally, app discoverability goes beyond the start experience and beyond the store in Windows in many ways. And one of them that we're sharing now is integration with Cortana, your digital personal assistant, who's coming to all Windows devices, not only Windows Phone. And in Windows 10, she will help direct customers to try and use applications to help them do more, like this example shows. And one of the things I'll point out, in addition, is the applications that are surfaced are at the very top of the Cortana experience, providing customers with the most easy and discoverable way to discover applications to perform the tasks that they want to perform. And the really, totally awesome thing about Windows 10 is that it enables you to reach all of these customers in all of these markets, across all of these devices, in all of these ways, by building just one application. Your one app, made possible by one operating system, one developer platform that spans the phone, tablets, PC, Xbox, and even more devices, submitted, published, and managed through one dev center, and one store, enabling distribution and commerce in 242 markets for consumers. And brand new in Windows 10, the store will for the first time enable businesses, governments, and academic organizations to buy, manage, and distribute applications to their employees and students as well through the store. Now, to tell you more and show you how, it's my privilege and honor to introduce my colleague and the man leading the Windows 10 developer platform effort, Kevin Gallo.
Thanks, Todd. As Todd said, I'm Kevin Gallo, and I work on the Windows Developer Platform team. So what that means is that me and my team are responsible for designing and building the APIs that developers then take and use to build their applications and distribute those applications. And I'm excited, beyond excited today, to be able to show you for the first time what developers will be able to do with these APIs and tools. But before I get into Windows 10, I first want to take the time to thank all the developers who've built applications for Windows and Windows Phone 8.1 and given us feedback. Your feedback is invaluable. There's no way we can go and design the next version without knowing the gaps, what we've done well, what we've kind of sometimes not done well, so that we can improve and make it a better platform so that developers can build the apps they dream of. So keep giving us that feedback. As you get and look into Windows 10, tell us what we've done right, tell us what we've done wrong. We want to be responsive to your feedback and really empower you. So today, I'm not going to be able to talk about everything that's coming in Windows 10. There's way, way too much. A lot of that will be told at Build and at the end of April, where we will go into in exhaustive detail. And we have over 100 technical sessions, and we'll have all the experts available for you to talk to, go into depth with, and really understand how the platform works. Today, I'm going to focus on just a small part, but an important part. And I want to talk about two specific things. First, the opportunity that you have as developers to grow your base with universal apps. And second, I want to talk about how web developers can maximize their investments in the web and they build websites as well as web apps. So every developer wants to grow their install base and reach customers in new and innovating ways. Mobility led a revolution that allowed us to really get experiences that had never before been seen. And it's been exciting. It's been a great experience, both as an end user and as a developer, to see these things come to life. However, it really was driven primarily by mobile devices. You know, when you talk about these are devices that you have on your person, like your phone or your tablet. And, you know, you had experiences that really surrounded that device. I call it basically, you bring the experience with you with your device. However, there were some shortcomings. While it gave us great value, there were some challenges. One, many times, you know, the screens were small, you know, and you had battery life. We're always worried, am I running out of battery? Am I not running out of battery? What can I do? Can I play that game? Those types of things. And collaborating has also sometimes been challenging. For example, if you take a photo and you want to show your friends in a room, you might be sitting in your living room with a large screen, you know, or you might be, you know, in a meeting room with a large screen, but you end up passing your phone around, letting everybody see it, or everybody's got to crowd over and look over your shoulder. Maybe you can text it to everyone, but it's kind of, you'd rather just use the screen in the room and use the device that makes the most sense. So we really see that we want to move from just having mobile devices to having mobile experiences, where I can use a device that is most productive for me at the right time and whatever device I choose to go use. So we see the evolution of mobile experiences moving from being surrounded by only a device, but being surrounded by the user. I want to use all the devices that are around me, and I want that experience to be mobile with me. Now, I talked about screen sizes, but it's not just about the screen size. It's about how I want to interact with the device itself. Each device has, you know, different benefits, pros and cons about using it in every task. For example, I typically find that I want to start with touch. You know, I'll have my 2-in-1 tablet, and I'll start to do something with touch. But if I need to do something where I want to be more productive or more precise, for example, when I was editing these slides, I need to use a mouse and a keyboard to really get the task done effectively. But then when I wanted to, say, like, annotate or add some notes as I was building the slides, I really preferred to use a pen. So we think that it's not just about screen size mobility, but about being able to choose the right input. The integration, the interacting with the device actually matters. So we think about the fact that Windows 10 can blaze a new path forward for mobile experiences by empowering developers with universal apps to make it available on whatever device the end user chooses to use and however they choose to use that device. Now, it's been a bit of a journey for us. We started out in Windows 7 with really kind of, we had Windows 7 the desktop, we had Windows Phone 7, and we had Xbox. And while they had a lot of APIs and a lot of things in common, they really weren't the same. And so developers sometimes got frustrated because of the lack of consistency, or maybe some of them were inflexible and didn't do as much. So over the last few years, we have taken a journey, and now we have a single scalable platform with Windows 10, where we've brought together our desktop, our phone, and the Xbox into one platform, and at the same time, we actually have brought on board several new device families in a very short period of time, integrated them in. So you can now bring all of this value, one platform, one core OS, one app platform, and one store to the full range of Windows devices that you see here today. Now, what does this really mean for developers? They can build one app that runs on IoT devices like sensors, mobile devices like your phone, your tablet, PC-type devices, you have 2-in-1s, your traditional desktop, traditional laptop, a living room device with the Xbox, a meeting room device with Surface Hub, and even to a revolutionary new device like HoloLens, which will allow you to bring holograms to a whole new level and innovate in ways that we've yet to see created yet. All this is what we call a universal app. And this now, we're not just throwing it out there saying go build them. Instead, we're providing a bunch of tools and infrastructure to make it easy for developers to build them. The first thing we're building is an adaptive UI control kit. This is basically UI controls that automatically adapt to both the screen size and the input model. We're introducing several new input models to integrate in there, whose natural use input like speech, gesture, facial recognition, gaze, all of these new technologies that can be integrated in there to create these new experiences. We have one SDK and one tool with Visual Studio 2015, where you can get all that knowledge as developers that you've learned and used over the years and continue to use that tool. I'll be showing that with some of the new innovations we've actually added. One store with universally available games and apps, digital media, and one dev center. So there's one portal you can go to, get telemetry across all the devices, figure out how you can monetize better, and really just learn about your customer and engage with your customer through that dev center. And back to all of this is with cloud services that we provide that allows it, and it works across all of our devices. Now, it's not just about the apps. A lot of times you say about the app experience, but it's also about the shell. I look at the shell as the canvas where your applications get highlighted. It's not the primary goal, but it provides access. Now, what does the shell mean? To me, the shell is really all those pieces around it that help orchestrate it. Things like on a desktop, like the taskbar, or on a phone, like the start menu with live tiles and pin tiles. But shells do more than just launch applications. They also provide the integration between the applications so they communicate and talk to each other. And so we've built highly customized shells to have the best experience on whichever piece of hardware you buy. So for example, if you have a desktop, we've made sure that's great for mouse, keyboard, and touch. And so whichever model you want to interact with, we can go and the shell works very well with that. And now we also have introduced, one of the things we got from feedback on that was about, hey, sometimes I want to be more in tablet mode when I have my 2-in-1, and other times I want to be more in mouse and keyboard. So we introduced a feature that we announced last in January called Continuum, which allows you to go either into a tablet mode where the apps are full screen, the start menu is larger, things get a bit bigger, or you can go into desktop mode where you have overlapping windows like a traditional desktop and a taskbar. And we allow you and users to kind of pick those modes, let them get a great experience. On our phone, we've optimized around one-hand operation because most of us who use a phone prefer to use it with one hand a lot of the time, sometimes two for some games, but I really want quick access. And for the Xbox, we've tuned it for game controller and Kinect type integration. Now, the nice thing is all of these shells are built on the same universal platform that we're making available to all developers. So the shells don't just work with one input metaphor or one interaction model. You can plug, for example, if you have a phone, you can plug in with Bluetooth, a keyboard, and a mouse, and all of our UI and controls, since they've been built to work with mouse and keyboard, will work naturally just as well. So you kind of get the benefits of an optimized experience, but it supports the broader way of universal apps. So now I'm going to get a little technical. How many people here are more technical side? You know, okay, a decent amount of you. So definitely, hopefully, you'll get a little bit more of the technology side, because sometimes people say, great, you said about buzzwords, but what does it really technically mean? So I'm going to go a little bit here and get a little geeky on you. So what a universal app really is the ability to build a single package. Developers in the past have had to build several packages and manage them. And while it's not an impossible task, it's been a challenge to know which package goes to which device. Now you can build a single package, we call this an AppX, and that package will run on all of our devices. You should submit that to the store, and that'll run on your phone, your desktop, your Xbox, or any of the devices in the Windows family. You can build one binary, and that'll run across them all. So you can build that, deploy it, and it will work and light up on each of the platforms. Now, you don't have to. I reiterate this, everybody goes, oh, it has to be one binary. What if I want a difference? You can build multiple binaries if you choose to. It is part of whatever the developer choice is for what is most efficient. But now you can also build one, which we clearly heard is valuable to many developers. Now, underpinning this is the fact that we have one API set. This is absolutely critical because that's what runs these applications. So we have one API set that runs across all the devices. Now, the next question sometimes people ask me is, well, is it just a common set? What about things that are device specific where I really want to light up something that's unique with a piece of hardware? We give you access to those APIs too. And I call this light up, where basically the app can run everywhere, and we have a mechanism where you detect, say, hey, am I on maybe an Xbox? And I'll light up talking into the, you know, People Hub or something like that, or the contact list or your friend list. So you can light up different special features that are on each of those devices. And I also want to highlight this is one platform that we use internally in Microsoft to build all of our apps, and it's made available the same platform everywhere. So we've been testing this, as we've been building our apps. And back in January, we showcased several of our apps that were built on Windows 10. And we're vetting this ourselves, learning it. Office is building on top of it. Our first party apps like Camera and Photos, all of these are testing that. And we're going to make that available to all developers to have all the same capabilities. And of course, it runs across all these devices. So I'm going to double click here and talk a little about Adaptive UX. A lot of people, again, ask me saying, how are you doing that? How are you making it so that it automatically adapts to the different form factors? That's a hard problem. It is a hard problem. And no mechanism solves all of it. But we want to make it as simple and as easy as possible to do on our platform. So I'm going to go into a little detail of how we see and envision that problem space and how we're tackling it. So it all starts from really making sure that your base level controls, your buttons, checkboxes, scrollers, all those types of things, they work with all different types of input, and they know how to adapt and work on different screen sizes and can scale with different layouts. And we've done that work, and we feel very good about our great control set. But then it's about pulling them all together into what we call panels or layouts. These are where you tend to have to do some tuning. Because if you're in different form factors, how you lay them out, you want to be different and optimized for the different form factors. And so what we've done is we've introduced several mechanisms where you can basically optimize those layouts based on different conditions. And I'm going to go do a demo and show you that in a minute. But first, I wanted to walk through a few concrete visual examples of what our applications have done to show you how, from design point, we're thinking about this problem. So this is the Skype app. Now, I'm clear, not final UI, it's not released. This is one visual of how it might work, and that's how we've been moving forward with it. We've still got a lot of testing to go. So if you look here, the UI on the phone is pretty similar to one on the desktop. You know, it's a little bit different. What you'll notice, first of all, is we decided that for a phone, hanging up is a pretty important gesture, and you really don't want to have to look. You want to be close to your thumb. So we made it bigger and moved it to the bottom. Very simple thing. And the reverse picture where you see yourself, you know what? There was really not enough space on the right-hand side. Instead, we put it up a little bit and narrowed it down a little bit and moved it more into a portrait view. Very simple app, very simple layout changes. But the important thing here is all of the developer code was the same, the exact same set of controls. All we did was some simple attributes to change the layout and the formatting. Now again, very simple example. Show me something complex. Everybody does the simple ones. So here's the next one that we looked at here. This is our People Hub. And what you'll notice here is, first of all, we have a new control here. We call this split view, or traditionally a lot of people have called it the hamburger control. It's been one of the number one items asked for, and so we're delivering that item, that feature, and that control in Windows 10. And what it does is it has three states. It has overlay mode, where if you look here, you press, the menu itself is behind there and only pops up when you click on the hamburger. It has a compact view. I'll show that later on a little bit. And then on the right-hand side, it has, in essence, the inline view, where it shows the whole menu when you have enough layout space. And what we've decided is to have inline when we're on a larger screen and to have overlay when we're on the phone. Then we also look here, is because of the narrowness of the phone, we decided that the profile page really would be by itself, and we'd add a pivot. There's a very simple pivot where you can pivot between profile, what's new, and history. And we decided to take a little bit more space on the desktop because we had the space and it just felt a little bit better. And then what's new in history, a little bit more on the side. And the third thing we did here was the app bar, where it's on the bottom again, close to that one-handed operation to your thumb. But traditionally, on desktops, your app bar has been near the top, so we decided to put that near the top and keep that consistency with most of your desktop applications. Again here, all of the code was the same. All the control sets were the same. All we did was some different changes to the layouts. Now, we all know that you're not going to just do that for several of your experiences. Some will adapt. Other ones, you're just going to want a different user experience. You want to tailor it to the device, and you want it to be best for that device. And therefore, it might just be a different user experience. And that's what we've done in this one. I look at this as a spectrum from when I can do some adaptability and it works good enough, all the way to I just want to tailor it. And there's always click stops in between. And every developer and designer will make their choices. So in this tailored experience, what we decided to do was, on the phone, it just looks different. We want a quick one-handed operation. You tend to want to look more at today and maybe a few days in advance. You're not looking at a large month view. And so we've optimized around that usage case on the phone of the calendar. Whereas on the desktop, we have a month view. You can pick that month, and you have much more drill down. You have more space to think about my month and what's going on in my calendar. We also had some space, so we used it. We put things like multiple calendars, something that you probably don't need access to. It can be a little bit deeper in the UI on the phone. And then in our gender view, I mean, we just basically showed quick access to the agenda for today, whereas on the desktop, we showed it in the cell that it made more sense. So here's an example of a completely custom, different user experience that's tailored. Both we think are valid, and both can be built as a universal application. So now I'm going to go, and I'm going to go show you this live and show you how easy it is in code. And everybody always says it's easy, and then, you know, when the developer gets into it, it's not as easy as it sounded. Is it up? Okay. So I'm going to do two things in my demo. The first one, I'm going to start with just a very simple, you know, create new project, show you the beginning of how to just create it and our new UI there, and then I'll show you something a little bit more complex. So here I am in Visual Studio 2015. This is the first time that we are showing a demo live with Visual Studio 2015 of building a Windows 10 application. So first time ever. So you'll know here, when I do new project, you'll note here, is we have a new tab. The first thing to note about that tab, for those of you that are students, there's nothing under it. That's because you don't need to create separate projects for anything. You just create a universal app. So let me give it a name here. Mobile World Congress Demo. I'll hit OK. This will go and it'll create the project. Again, just noting some things here. First, there's only one project, not multiple projects. You only need to build one. You can create separate XAML if you want to do the tailored experience, but here, I only need the main XAML. I'm going to build one that runs everywhere. So let me open up my main page. I'm going to go into my design view. Let me open up my toolbox, drag a button, maybe make it a little bit bigger, move it over, rotate it. So I'm not a good designer. Just got to have a little fun at it. Wake it up, people. Get excited. So here, I'm just going to pop a message box. So we go message, dialogue. And what it does here, new feature, if some of you haven't seen it, it'll tell me I have to put a using statement, because I always forget. And so then, let me just create this. New message, dialogue. Hello, Barcelona. All right, and then here, I will, if I can type, there we go. And so I'm just gonna run this on the local machine here. And as long as I didn't screw anything up, and I did, I mistyped. Everybody mistypes. That's why we have the little squiggly, so it's easy to find things. How many people love the little squigglies? How many times has that saved you? There we go. We got a button. Click on the button, and it pops a dialogue. Very simple application. First, Windows 10 application built on stage. You saw it. You were here. You experienced it. Now you can see it running on the phone. And so I'm going to move over to the emulator and show you. Just click here. It's going to deploy to the phone emulator. Let me bring that up. There we go. And same exact button, rotated the same way. And when I click on it, you'll see it pops a dialog, but a way that's just custom to the phone, which is the toast notification that comes down. So now, you've seen it for the first time running on a phone. Okay, so. Now it's a very simple app. It's great to see it. We always do the hello world. Well, I asked my team to help me build a more complex application. So I'm going to swap over to a product that we've already built and kind of show you something a little more complex. So I'm going to run it and kind of show you what the application is, and then I'm going to proceed to make some changes to it to improve it for responsive design. So here the app launches, and it's a you know, basically a simple travel app that shows you the sites and what's going on. And you know, of course, my team felt that the most important thing going on here to see was me, because of course the most important people here are you. So, and then we have some sites, and you'll notice that we have the same hamburger or split view control at the top level, and then I have a find hotels and getting around. So very simple application. So it looks good, love it at this size. However, as I shrink it down, kind of really not very good, not good responsive design there. And when I look at it, I'm going, wow, you know, as I get small, really wish this wasn't here. I don't need this whole menu here as I get smaller. And so, you know what, I'm gonna tackle that first since I know how to go do that pretty easily. So let me go in here to my XAML. And so here you'll see the split view. This is the control right here. And you'll notice there's some code commented out here. So I'm gonna uncomment this and kind of show you what this code does. This is actually all XAML. So we've introduced something we call an adaptive trigger. And this trigger fires whenever the size hits within a certain range that's been set by the trigger state. And then it has what we call setters. And so when that trigger, that state triggers, these setters are applied, and that changes the state of the layout. So as an example, I've introduced three states, small, medium, and large, very inventive and creative by me. And the first one here is our narrow state, and what I'll do in that narrow state is I'll tell it to go into overlay mode, which is where it only shows the little hamburger and shows nothing. In the medium state, I want it to be in compact mode, and in the wide state, I want it to be like it was before in the inline mode. So with this in place, and you can see most of this is, it's only six lines of real code. Most of the other stuff is filters about what states to use. You'll see when I shrink it down, now all of a sudden that's the compact mode, and as I get smaller, it goes into overlay mode, and it can pop up. So we instantly get a very nicely responsive design from the split view. However, what I notice is, as I get smaller here, wow, you know, this kind of, you know, one of the most important things here is kind of the, you know, what's going on versus the hotels. You know, and so let me go move the hotels down below. I think once it gets small, the right thing to do there is, rather than dock it, have it move below and in the flow of the content. So let's go try that. How are we gonna do that? So let me close that. So I have that inside of this home.xaml. And what you'll see here is another new control or panel that we've introduced called a relative panel. For those of you that have been on other platforms or used other UI systems, it's a fairly common panel, and we're introducing this with Windows 10. This allows you to dock to the left or to the right, top or bottom, and put it in flow. And you can change those using the same technology of the setters that we said. Depending on different states, I can tell it to dock to different points in the user experience. So again, I have some stuff I've done here in the Visual State Manager that I will uncomment. Let me talk you through it. Again, I have the small, medium, and large states, or we say narrow and wide and medium. And what I've done here is I've just set up some triggers. I change, tell it where to align it. I change some margins. And you know, basically realigned it a little bit here. And I did the same thing in the medium state. And I actually said, you know what, in the wide state, just keep it the way it is. It's good enough, so I have no setters there at all. So let me go run this. And so now you'll see, when I resize it, you'll see it went to compact mode, but it also, it moved those things down to the bottom. So now it's actually just right in the flow, very simple changes. I didn't have to write any code. All I did was tell it at what points I wanted to change which parts of the XAML. And then one of the things I did there, which I didn't really show you in the code, is if you notice this banner here, I said, you know what, as I get smaller, let me move it out of the way, putting it up into the sky. Otherwise, it starts to obstruct too much. And that was, again, one of those three or four setters that I had in there. So basically, the idea is that with very simple changes, with these triggers, these adaptive triggers, you can get great responsive design. You don't have to write a whole lot of code, and it can really be done by your designer, not even have to have a developer go and do the work. So, now, it's not just, you know, about running it on the desktop. It's great. But since I made the small design, What does it look like on a phone? Do I have to do any work? Because the phone's a small layout. Let's see what it looks like on the phone. Exactly the same application with all those changes. So let me turn my phone on here. And then here's the app here. So I'm going to run the app. And you can see it's got exactly, it just used the narrow state layout. And I can just do it. It's all in the flow. And it looks great. It works well. You know, I may want to make further tweaks for a one-handed device. But I actually would probably at this point say it's good enough. I'd ship to my customers. And if they want some feedback and they ask me to go tweak some stuff, I'll tweak it later. But basically, I took what was a narrow view on my desktop. And I can just run that. It adapts. It works on the phone great. Right? You can see the menuing and everything just works just like you'd expect. So, however, that's just the phone and that's the PC. And we've shown a little bit of that before. But what happens when you want to take that to an Xbox? So, here you can see the exact same app that I built running on an Xbox. And it lays out great. However, as you kind of move around and use it from a controller, you know, to be honest, it's not a very conventional way that you'd expect to see on a console. You know, the split view is kind of odd, and it works, and it's functional. And we always say that you can always take these apps, they'll adapt, and they'll work. But if you end up getting customers that want a custom experience, you spend a little bit of effort, and you can make it better. So what we did, and because we don't have it yet able to deploy easily on stage to the Xbox, I have another version of this app that we've built, which moved to basically having a tab view at the top. So all we did was change the tab from a split view to a tab view, and we get nice responsive design, and I didn't have to change any of the content view. So it's not like you have to go redo the whole application. You change the parts that make sense, and you keep the parts that are good and are responsive. And you just do that based on the user experience that you want for your customers. So you know, here I can go and I can run it. I have a nice large map. I can go back to my home. I can even get the scrolling working. So basically, it's the same thing here. Running on Xbox, all we did was swap out for a tab view. So basically, we make universal apps available across all of our platforms with adaptive UI, with the ability to leverage the cloud. We have one developer platform. You can use one dev center, easily integrating that and making your applications available where your customers want to use them in the way that your customers want to use them. So I'm going to move on and talk about the second topic, which is maximizing your web investments. So back in January, we announced Project Spartan, which is a new browser that we're building for phone, tablet, PC, and Xbox. It's also built using the same adaptive the same universal app platform, and therefore means it adapts across all those devices, you handle all the different input metaphors, and deeply integrated with all of the device features. It's powered by a new web engine, which is optimized for the modern web. It works for both mobile and desktop websites, and it operates great from an interoperable point of view. We've also improved security and robustness. These are critically important. Anybody using the web, and we take it very seriously, and we make that a job. And we spend a lot of effort making sure that you get the most secure browsing experience when using Project Spartan. And we want to keep it always up to date. The web is moving. We want to make sure we're interoperable with the modern web, and we keep up again with all those security issues that we're constantly keeping our browser up to date as fast as possible. Now, when I talk to developers, especially web developers, they always want to know how in the world they can leverage what they've built and what they've invested on the web, but get a native experience. They love their workflow. They love being able to publish. They built all this testing infrastructure to make sure when they deploy their website, their customers get a great experience. But they can't integrate in the same way that native apps integrate into a device. They don't have access to all the same APIs. They can't get the exact same integration into the shell experience. They kind of want the best of both worlds. And you know what? I think they should get the best of both worlds. And so what we're introducing with Windows 10 is something that we call hosted web apps. What they allow you to do is to bring your website into our store, but keep your developer workflow. So the way it works is you go to our store, you basically have to give it a product a name, obviously you need a name and some identity, and then you give us an URL to your website. And then in the store, it will show up as if it was any other type of native application. So that's great. So now you have promotion in the store, availability in the shell. But more than that, you keep your workflow. You don't have to go change how you go publish updates to your website. And you get access to native capabilities. The way you get access to native capabilities, if I get a little technical again, is you give us a manifest which has some metadata telling us which APIs that you want your app to be able to use. So if you want to access the contact list or the calendar or something that has, you know, it requires us to ask permission of the user, we'll go and do that. And then in your JavaScript, you can break out of the web sandbox when you're inside of a hosted web app, and you can call those APIs. And basically have access to pretty much the entire universal API set, including Cortana, Camera, Contact List, and several others. So I'm gonna do a demo of this and show you how this works and just how powerful and revolutionary we think it is for web app development. So I'm gonna close Visual Studio because we don't need Visual Studio for this. Instead, I am going to open up Sublime and GitHub. The way my website works, well, let me actually show you the website first. So let me just click on the link here. So I'm gonna go to the website here. This is actually hosted on Azure. It's backed by Git. And so basically GitHub, I can go publish and it publishes to my website, a fairly standard web workflow. And the app is already built to have nice responsive UI using web technology. You know, and I can scroll down and I can basically use this. It's the same thing, it's pretty much a sightseeing application, but I wanna book a trip here. And so I could just choose it. But rather than talk about the website, let's go look about how the web app would work. So I'm gonna use Sublime here. And I have some code that I've already commented out here. So I'm going to uncomment that. And then I'm gonna walk you through kind of what it does. First thing we do here is we say, hey, am I inside of the web app? Am I using the web plug, the Windows plugin? So if you're good, you know, like any good web dev is you check to make sure that the plugin's available. And then the next thing you'll see is we can actually just call universal APIs. So you just check it, and so if you're inside of a hosted web app, just in my standard web server, my website JavaScript, I can start to call those APIs. So let me save this and prove to you that this actually works. And then we'll go git status. Yep, it's all there. Git. I'll push that update up, if I can actually type that right. So basically what I did here is I just made the changes, I saved them, and I'm actually gonna push them up to Git, and then Git will update my website. And to kind of prove it to you that this is working, I'm gonna run this from my phone. So here, I already have the app installed. We call it Cortoso Travel. If I launch the application, you'll notice I didn't get an update from our store. There was simply nothing came from there. I didn't have to do any workflow. I didn't have to go to the dev center or anything like that. I just updated the website like I normally would update it. This goes and gets the update. And so now I can click. I can pick a date. Let's pick today. Hit confirm. And here what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna choose a friend. This shows the first way we integrate with the device. You couldn't do this on a website, which is this is actually selecting a contact that is already on the device. I'm gonna pick Andrew, see if he wants to go with me. And then the second thing here is I'm gonna add this to my calendar. Again, something you don't have access to, we have APIs available in the universal API set to go and add something to your calendar. So here I am adding it to my calendar, and I'll just say, yay, and save that. And just to be a gratuitous demo, I'll show you another feature where I can just push notifications. Again, something you can't do on your website, which is you could update live tiles, you can push notifications, and these things will show up, and you'll see it here, it shows up at the top. And this would actually show up in my Action Center as well. All of this fully integrated, running from a website, able to access all of the universal API sets. That's pretty amazing. So, in summary, two things I've shown you today are, first of all, how you can take universal apps and kind of move forward in this mobile revolution that we have. We start with mobile devices that we all love, but we start to move to mobile experiences that are centered around the user, not just the device that they're using. And two, how we can bring forward the web investments into the future of web apps, where you can light them up without having to change how you build, how you deploy, how you maintain, how you test, but get all the power of a web app on Windows 10. So what's next today? So we're gonna have three more in-depth sessions. The next one starts at 2:30, and we'll go over several more details. There'll be a little more detail coming in each of those sessions. You can also go to the hands-on lab here and participate in our quick start, where you can actually get your hands on the SDK and try it out for the first time. No one else has had that ability. So you'll be able to go and try it out and kick the tires on it. And as I said in the beginning, give us feedback. Let us know what you think. You can also register and sign up as a Windows 10 insider and try out the previews. I'll give you a little hint. The next preview will have Project Spartan in it. And you don't want to miss that. You want to try Project Spartan. Give it a try. Run it on your website. Tell us how it works and how well it performs. And the last thing is, come hear from the experts. Those are the people who have written the code, designed the APIs, and run the system. They'll be available at Build on April 29th. Thank you.